26, 2007. This meeting will be for work sessions only. There will be no public hearing or public testimony taken. The public that's present are certainly welcome to observe, but I would urge you that we will not permit any applause or other demonstrations in the hearing room. I'd also ask that all cell phones or pagers or other electronic communication devices be turned off, because even if they're in a vibrate or silent only mode, they interfere with the audio system we have in the room. So please shut those off completely. Committee members, we've been meeting for almost 3 months. We've heard from a wide range of invited stakeholders, some of them on multiple occasions. And we've heard many hours of testimony from the public on Measure 37 generally, on proposed fixes and on specific bills. There's been a work group of members from this committee that spent over 25 hours meeting and discussing potential common ground for a fix for Measure 37. And all the while, during that time we've been meeting, claims continue to be processed, new lawsuits get filed, and pending ones proceed. Most significantly, the 180-day clock that is set by Measure 37 for the processing of claims continues to run on the surge of claims that came in last fall between November 1 and December 4, 2006. The compensation claimed by all those various claimants continues to mount, totals significantly over $10 billion currently. And within a couple of weeks, the state and some counties will be so swamped they can't keep up. They must either fail to waive land use restrictions and thereby trigger liability for the state and for local governments of billions of dollars, or they must summarily waive land use restrictions without making sure that they're valid, thereby exposing the state and local governments to claims from people who feel harmed by that waiver. So the time has come to make decisions. The people of Oregon didn't send us here just to listen, just to analyze, just to disagree with one another. They sent us here to fix the problems with Measure 37. And with that, I open a work session on House Bill 3540 and recognize Co-Chair Brzozinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move for the introduction of the Dash 6 amendments on House Bill 3540.
Representative Brzozinski has moved the adoption of the Dash 6 amendments, which you'll see were distributed out here in form from Legislative Council here at the start of this meeting. There was a draft of them that had not gone through copy editing that was distributed around within the building to committee members in early afternoon. And so I'd like at this point to invite Richard Whitman and Lane Shetterly forward to describe the Dash 6 amendments. Mr. Whitman.
Good evening, Chair McPherson, members of the committee. Richard Whitman, for the record, from the Oregon Department of Justice, here tonight to describe to you the significant changes that have been made from SB 1019-5 amendments that you heard a week ago today, and the bill that you have before you, which is HB 3540-6. There are nine changes, significant changes, between SB 1019-5 and House Bill 3540-6s, and what I'm going to do is go through the nine changes and describe those to you to make sure that you understand how substantively 3540 is different from 1019. I am not going to go back through all the ground that we covered a week ago. The basic provisions and framework of 3540 are the same as 1019, and so I'm only going to describe the changes. And I have two handouts that I've passed out to members of the committee, and there should be enough copies there for people in the audience also. That the first of those is a summary of changes from 1019 to 3540. That's what I'm going to be working from as I talk you through this. And then I have also handed out a section-by-section summary of House Bill 3540, which was the basis for my verbal walkthrough of the framework. I'm losing track of the days now, but I believe about 10 days ago when the committee had an informational hearing on the framework that was coming out of the work group. All right. So what are the major changes from 1019 to 3540? There, again, are nine of them. The first one is Senate Bill 1019 had an emergency clause in it. So it would have substantively amended Measure 37 and would have gone into effect immediately because of the emergency clause. That has been replaced in House Bill 3540 with a new Section 26 of 3540, which refers the substantive amendment of Measure 37 to the voters at a special election to be held. So that's the first of the nine substantive changes. The second of the nine changes is clarification in the drafting in terms of what land use regulations trigger a claim for just compensation under this legislation. And to state what those clarifications are, this modification to Measure 37 clarifies that it is land use regulations that restrict the residential use of real property and regulations that restrict farm and forest practices that can give rise to a Measure 37 claim. Claims for billboards, mines, and other commercial and industrial uses are not allowed under this legislation, under this referral. However, there are provisions in the bill that allow claimants who have filed claims for those types of uses to amend their claims to come in for the authorizations for residential use that are provided elsewhere in the bill. So that's the second major change. The third change in Senate Bill 1019, there was what we've called an automatic cutoff date of March 1, 1994. As I explained a week ago, the reason for that date was that was the date of the last major change in terms of state regulation of farm and forest.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Is there any chance, if it's not too complicated, for Ms. Whitman to refer to the sections of the bill, the dash six, when he talks about what the changes are? We have the summary sheet, but it'd be nice to...
Very good. I think it's a good suggestion.
Chair McPherson, Senator Schrader, I can certainly do that. And you'll note in the handout that I've passed out to you in parenthetical, after each one of these nine, I've put the section. But I'll take you to the exact subsection in the bill as I talk these through. So let me back up a little bit. On number one, in terms of the referral provisions of the bill, are in Section 26 of the bill. That's where the referral language exists. In terms of the clarification of land use regulations that are the basis for a claim, the definition of land use regulation appears in Section 2, page 4, subsection 14. That's where it lays out what land use regulations are under this measure. All right. Now back to the automatic cutoff date of March 1, 1994. Again, this is based on the date of the last enactment of major changes to regulation of use of farm and forest land in Oregon. There was some testimony received by the committee, and there have been comments made that cutoff date was arbitrary and didn't provide for at least a few claimants who acquired property after that date, but then were harmed by land use regulations that were adopted later. And there are some situations like that. So recognizing that, the remaining members of the work group have directed that we take out that date and provide an opportunity for individuals who have acquired their property later to prove up that they have, in fact, suffered a loss because of a land use regulation that was adopted after that date. I can say as a practical matter that there, in most cases, if people acquired after that date, they are not going to be able to show that they would have been allowed to build a dwelling or to divide their property after that date. But we'll give people the opportunity to make that showing, and if they can, they'll be approved for a home site. And so these provisions appear. They don't actually appear. They came out of sections 6 and 7 of the bill. So there was, again, that cutoff date in sections 6 and 7, which are now gone. All right, the fourth change has to do with Section 7 of the bill. And as I described a week ago, there are three main pathways for approved and pending claims. Section 7 is the so-called conditional path. If claimants believe they've been harmed by an amount that's more than the 1 to 3 in the so-called express path, then they can go under this conditional path and have to demonstrate that they've actually had a reduction in value. There are some screens that are used to, in certain cases, mandate that claimants whose property falls into certain classifications can't go through that conditional path. One of the ones that we described last week is if the property is in a groundwater restricted area. Another one that we talked about last week is property that is classified as high-value farmland. There were some questions raised in testimony about the definition of high-value farmland and how that screen works. And to recap how it works in this bill, in Section 7 and in Section 2, and here, actually, I want to direct you to Section 2, sub 11, which appears on page 4. That's the definition of high value. I'm sorry. It appears on page 2, subsection 10, high value farmland. The requirement is that the land be zoned, first of all, for exclusive farm use or mixed farm and forest use, and that it meet the definition of high-value farmland that's in existing law in 215.710, or that it be what we've commonly called the Harbor Bench land down near Brookings, west of Highway 101, or in paragraph C, that the land be in the place of use for a water right for irrigation or within the boundaries of an irrigation district, or on land that contains not less than 5 acres planted in wine grapes, or in certain other lands that are within viticultural areas. Some of those have the limitation in it that the land be zoned for exclusive farm use. Some of them don't. Those have been done carefully. So, for instance, the viticultural areas would pick up land regardless of the zoning. Similarly, with regard to land that's within an irrigation district, it's not going to matter what the zoning is. But for most of the land that comes in under the existing definition of high-value farmland, it is going to have to be zoned for exclusive farm use or mixed farm and forest use. The intent was not to pick up lands in other zoning classifications. Okay, and then to take you to page 4, you'll see a definition of high-value forest land there. A screen has, and this is again in response to testimony that's been received and input from the remaining members of the work group, a screen has also been added to parallel the treatment of high-value farmland, in this case for high-value forest land. So what is high-value forest land? High-value forest land is land that is zoned as forest land or mixed farm and forest, and that is capable of producing more than 120 cubic feet per acre per year in western Oregon, or more than 85 cubic feet per acre per year in eastern Oregon, and the property is capable of producing more than 5,000 cubic feet of timber in western Oregon per year, or more than 4,000 in eastern Oregon per year. Those are intended to pick out the very best forest land and provide that for the very best forest land, claimants are allowed to go under the 1-3 express lane, but not under the 4-10 conditional path. That's the most complicated of the changes. The fifth change has to do with, and actually the next three, 5, 6, 7, all have to do with valuation. So for number 5, this appears in sections 7, 9, and 12 of the bill. And I think in each case, Chair McPherson, Senator Schrader, that it appears in subsection 6 of each of those sections. The methodology that's would be used under this legislation to determine whether or not the value of the property has been reduced is now the same for property outside of an urban growth boundary, property that's inside of an urban growth boundary, and then also for Measure 37 claims going forward. And that method is the same basic method that was explained a week ago before and after the enactment of the offending land use regulation. The sixth change also appears in each of those three sections and also again appears, I believe, in subsection 6 of each of those. And this, the 1019 had in it a, once you determine the amount of the loss, that was then brought to today's value using inflator based on the consumer price index. That has been replaced with an adjustment that's based on interest on that loss from the date of loss to current, not based on the consumer price index, but based on the rate for a one-year treasury bill, compounded annually. This is intended to reflect both the inflation and the lost opportunity costs since the harm that was caused by the enactment of the land use regulation. The seventh change appears in Section 12. So this is, in Section 12 is the section, one of the main sections that governs new Measure 37 claims. And when I say new Measure 37 claims, I mean claims not only that are occurring, technically under the bill after May 15, 2007, but also claims concerning new land use regulations that were enacted after that date. So in Section 12, you heard a week ago my testimony about the 20% threshold. That was a condition on those new claims. Again, in response to some of the testimony that was received, the remaining members of the work group have decided to go with a slightly different threshold set up that responds to some of the concerns that were raised. So there's now a two-part threshold. There's a threshold for each land use regulation, and that threshold is a 10% reduction in value. And then to address situations where a public entity has enacted multiple regulations over a period of time that have harmed the property owner, there's a second threshold to pick up those multiple situations, which is a 25% threshold over a 5-year period. So if the value of the property has been reduced by more than 25% over a 5-year period, then you would have a right to a claim also. Okay. That's the seventh change. And the eighth, we also had some input from county governments who were, some of whom were concerned about situations where the only land use regulations that were involved in the Measure 37 claim were local. Some question about whether it was appropriate for the state to process those in, where only local land use regulation was involved. Frankly, we think that'll be relatively rare that it's only a local land use regulation. But in those situations, there has been language added to the bill in Section 8 which provides for the Department of Land Conservation and Development to transfer those claims back to the counties for processing if it's only a local land use regulation that's the basis for the claim. That's the eighth. And then the ninth, on the ombudsman provisions which appear in Section 17 and 18 of the bill, the appointment under 1019 would have been done by the Land Conservation and Development Commission under this bill. It's done by the governor. And the duties of the ombudsman are to help claimants with preparation of claims and to facilitate the processing of claims if there are issues that arise as the claims being processed.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Is it clear that the ombudsman is not acting as legal counsel to the claimants, but simply a pathway through the paperwork? The way that you described it, it would seem to suggest that the ombudsman would be available for actual accumulation of claims, paperwork filling out. This is really just a lubricant between the bureaucracy and citizens.
Yeah. Chair McPherson, Senator Johnson, that's correct. This is intended as a lubricant to help smooth some of the inevitable problems that arise as these things are processed. The intent is not that the ombudsman give legal advice or provide any sort of consulting service to the claimants, but just in those extreme difficult cases where some problem has come up that can easily be facilitated to do that.
Thank you.
This is something that we've seen happen at the local government level, I think, and has been quite successful. So this allows the state to do it.
Thank you for the clarification.
Mr. Chair, if I
Mr.
may,
Shatterly.
For the record, thank you. Lane Shatterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. One other thing, it was the amendment of the definition of land use regulation in Senate Bill 1019-5, there was omitted reference to the goals and, administrative rules and goals of the Land Conservation and Development Commission. That was helpfully pointed out by a memorandum that we received, and it was also inadvertent. That has been corrected on page 5 of the dash 6 amendments. Subsection 14G expressly now includes an administrative rule or role of the Land Conservation and Development Commission within the definition of land use regulation. Again, always intended, but inadvertently omitted out of the draft that you saw last week.
And if I could, Chair McPherson, I just on the record want to extend thanks to Legislative Council, which has worked really hard on this bill over the last week. And I think what you had before you is a much better product. It's been looked at quite carefully now. So thanks to Legislative Council.
And I'll look to the back of the room. Mr. Hendricks, who is from Legislative Council, is in the room, and we deeply appreciate his hard work in bringing this product forward.
And his staff.
Harrison Conley has sweated pools over this.
Yes,
as well.
And all the good folks in Legislative Council. I didn't mean to diminish anybody's contribution.
Well, I think it's worth noting, I mean, as many people know, we thought we were going to have amendments last meeting and the meeting before. We have a situation where we have a number of individuals that work for Legislative Council that have been ill. So we've had two or three that have been out. Even the head of the office has been out sick, I believe, this full week as well, or has been for a good portion of it. We've had individuals working over the weekend. They've been working in some cases 6 a.m. until in wee hours of the evenings. And so we really do appreciate knowing that the workload that you have is not just to serve this committee, but every committee in the legislature. So, Mr. Hendricks, please express our gratitude to everyone in the office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Whitman? I think that's it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
So, committee, we have a motion before us, which is to adopt the DAC-6 amendments, which were just described to you and which are sitting before you. Is there any discussion of the motion? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move we amend the motion of Senator Brzezinski's and strike the DAC-6 and substitute the DAC-5.
Senator Beyer moves that we replace the DAC-6 amendments in the motion with the DAC-5s.
Is there, let's hear a description of the Dash 5s then, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Dash 5s are in front of you. They are summarized in the staff measure summary. There is one error in that. I will briefly go through them. The Dash 5s in Section 2 have a couple of definitions in them. I hope, does everyone have the Dash 5s? And should have in your packets.
We're still trying to find
them. The DAC Section 3 sets a system for how claims after approved claims are, or claims are approved, how they, a subdivision under the approved claim could work. And it specifically says that a parcel. Apparently, not everyone has the Dash 5s yet.
Sorry. Go ahead. Oh, sorry. Got a lot of paper here, Senator, and it takes a while.
They are in the packets.
For our members, if you have the package with the little clip, and our administrators actually has a cover sheet that shows what's included, and they're in that order.
To continue, Mr. Chair, Section 3 states that subdivision that is proposed by the granting of a Measure 37 claim, the parcel size would be limited in that subdivision. The parcel size would be limited to the median tax lot size of the surrounding 1 mile of the of all parcels contained entirely within 1 mile of the perimeter of the part of the proposed subdivision, or 20 acres, whichever is smaller. And that is the one mistake that's in the staff measure summary. It says 30 acres, but the amendment says 20 acres. They also set up a system of a compensation account, and the compensation account would be formed by the back taxes that are paid by Measure 37 claimants, and when they convert farm or forest land from farm or forest deferral into a different use, there is a 5 or a 10 year back tax depending on the zone that it is. Those, that back taxes would be sequestered into a fund at the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and those funds would be first used to compensate landowners who have valid claims today that this legislation would change and reduce the value of, compensate them for the monetary money they have already spent on that, and then in the future compensate for other valid Measure 37 waivers that the local government or state chooses not to grant a waiver, instead pay compensation. The amendment then speaks to transferability. It makes waivers transferable. It also makes deeds, any, it kind of defines, I guess, would say what the interest therein would be, any deed that has been LLC, corporation, partnership, as long as the principles are the same as there was a sole proprietorship, though they would still have valid claims. It also says that if a spouse who is not named on the deed is, has a claim to back to the date of the marriage of the to the, her spouse who is named on the deed. And finally, it inserts a new provision in on, that would be on page 6, lines 12 through 15, clarifying that statutes and administrative rules regarding forest practices that are primarily intended to protect public health and safety, or that directly implement or apply a federal law without discretion as to the manner of implementation or application of the federal law. So that was a clarification of what the public health and safety exemption means. And then, oh, finally then, Mr. Chair, it declares emergency effective on passage, also extends by 180 days for filing of claims that were submitted between November 1st and December 4th of 2006.
Thank you, Senator. We now have a motion to substitute the Dash 5s for the Dash 6s in the motion to amend House Bill 3540. Is there any discussion of that motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator George.
I want to go back to some original comments we had in this committee, which is the idea was to come up with a planning system and to deal with some of the issues dealing with Measure 37. Senator Beyer has run these amendments past me, and so what I did was is that I contacted the planning, so one of the planning departments in my district, had them do an analysis of it. It is a proposal that not only maintains the integrity of ballot measure 37, it responds to most of the public testimony that we've heard on 37 as far as some of the concerns people had about some of the development, makes it consistent with the land use pattern of the area. It's straightforward. It deals with all the litigation that we have heard about that have been filed, the four major areas of litigation that have spawned some litigation. And then I also was privy to some maps that were created on this that we would be more than willing to share with the committee. And if you saw the maps on Senator Beyer's proposal, it's a brilliant plan about finding a way to have people who can have uses of their property that is consistent with the land use pattern in their area, keeps integrity for the people who have Measure 37 claims, deals with the issues that people have about the potential conflicts. And if you saw the maps and if you saw the result of this, it's actually a planning measure. The other amendments that we're apparently going to be looking at tonight are restrictions, trying to take away people's rights, trying to just limit the number without any regard to really what happens out there. And I think what Senator Beyer has done is come up with a creative solution that is simple, straightforward, deals with litigation, addresses the concern of the public, deals with the litigation that issues that we've had, and can draw broad bipartisan support. And I think if you would give an opportunity, and I've requested it before, give an opportunity for us to show you these maps, I think you'd be very, very impressed with Senator Beyer's proposal. And not all such situations. I actually have two of them mapped that are in my district. And if you look at the parcels in the area, you look at the current uses on the ground, it is completely consistent with planning ideas that people want, but also at the same time of protecting the rights of Measure 37 claimants. I want to compliment Senator Beyer. I know he's been frustrated by the lack of engagement on these, but this is the one proposal that I see where it's a combination of both addressing the fairness issue, but also addressing the planning side of it, and I think it deserves serious consideration by this committee.
Thank you, Senator George. Any further discussion on the motion? Representative Clem.
I just wanted to ask two questions. On the sort of, I guess it's section, well, lines 1 through 3, really, on page 2. So if I get this right, you go and do a study of the median size of the tax lots within a mile, and if it's smaller than 20 acres, like it's 5 acres, then anybody who has claims would be automatically translated into 5 acres. That would be their minimum lot size, excuse me. And then if it's, say, 80 acres, then the person would be assigned a 20-acre. Is it minimum or maximum?
Minimum.
And lot size.
That is correct.
Okay. One other question. Does this proposal make any attempt at a different valuation formula than what's present in Measure 37 currently?
It does not.
Any further discussion of the motion?
Chair.
Senator Pozanski.
Chair, based on the summary that we've received on the dash fives, I would take issue as to what it would accomplish as compared to the dash six. It's my opinion that the dash six is much more in line with the testimony that we've heard tonight and previous nights, I should say, regarding Measure 37, the intent of many people. It clarifies and fixes. Accordingly, I will not be able to support the motion to substitute the dash fives for the dash sixes.
Representative Clem.
Yeah, just a comment. I'm also unable to support it, although I do actually think it's quite creative and interesting. My problem is the valuation formula. I just really feel like after having the town halls and thousands of conversations with people that the valuation formula that resulted last week, there was an article presented to us earlier this week about Linn County processing claims within 90 seconds. I don't feel that was what the measure called for in terms of evaluation formula. It's not been uniform, it's not been appropriate, and I can't vote for something that just uses the same thing that I feel has been broken. It hasn't worked, in my view, in my opinion. Thank you.
Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I personally support Senator Byer's Dash 5 amendments, and I congratulate him on putting together a very common sense approach to Measure 37.
Thank you. Senator Byer.
I guess as a form of a close, if everyone else is done debating the motion in response to Representative Clem, I would have been happy to work with anyone on this issue had I been asked.
For the record, I wasn't on the work group either, so I just want to get that out there.
If there's no further discussion, then we have before us a motion to substitute the Dash 5 amendments for the Dash 6 amendments in the pending main motion to amend House Bill 3540. And so we're going to proceed to a vote, which will be done by roll call on that motion to substitute. And committee members, this will be the first vote we will have cast in this committee. And so this would be an opportunity for those of us who have actual or potential conflicts of interest to announce those, to put them on the record. And I would regard this as sufficient for all the votes we take this evening later on any other legislation that we consider this evening, but I think it's important to get that on the record. And I will begin by disclosing that I am a one-third owner of a family farm corporation in rural Linn County that could file a Measure 37 claim. No claim has been filed by that corporation, but it is a potential claimant based on ownership going back decades ago, and also the personal owner of a 110-acre tree farm in rural Benton County that also could have a Measure 37 claim, although none has been filed on it. So that's my announcement of potential conflict of interest, and I would open the for anyone else. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was considering abstaining from a vote today, and I hope you'll clarify why we have to vote. I want to declare a potential conflict of interest. My family hasn't filed a Measure 37 claim and could have, but my husband's father has filed several Measure 37 claims in Multnomah County. So if we adopt the Dash 6s, I don't see that as being even a potential conflict of interest. But that being said,
And for the benefit of people who are watching our proceedings, our rules require members to vote. We don't have the right to abstain from a vote. We are obligated to cast a vote.
Thank you.
Senator Brzozinski.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, there is actually another option, but I know it's not one that most would want to take. But if someone was absent from the room at the time of the vote, they would not be required to vote. So that's just put out there for discourse. But the way our system is set up, as the co-chair McPherson has said, for those who believe there could be a perceived or direct or indirect conflict, by putting it on the record, they have done what is required under our state law for the operations of this body as a legislature, and then they can in fact do their duty and vote.
Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Is the good senator contemplating not being here for a vote?
No, I'm here. I have no conflict, and I will be here. Please join me.
Representative Smith.
I want to thank you for addressing that issue, but I have tried to resign many times from this committee.
Representative Senator Smith has said she has taken on hard duty, and with all the hours of meetings that we've had on this committee. And
I've been at every one of them.
And I greatly appreciate the commitment that she's brought to bringing together this process. Representative Clem.
Yes, I think actually much like yours, I need to declare a potential conflict of interest. My wife is a shareholder inside of a family company that has owned an 80-acre orchard dating to 1978. There is no Measure 37 claim filed by my family or the company, and I believe everything we're working on tonight applies to people who did file Measure 37 claims, but just thought I would put it on the record.
Okay. Senator Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a potential conflict of interest. I own property that would be eligible for Measure 37 claims, and I have filed Measure 37 claims.
Very good. Senator Schrader.
Yeah, I may have a potential conflict of interest also, in that I have a farm outside of Canby that could be eligible for Measure 37 claims, but have not filed a Measure 37 claim at this time.
Very good. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Contrary to some press reports, I have no interest in property that has a Measure 37 claim or can have a Measure 37 claim filed right now. It is the other Senator George who has filed the Measure 37 claim, regardless of what some people have testified or has been in the paper. However, I am the owner of property that I'm expecting that someday some agency will actually regulate, so I may be affected by, since I am now a property owner, that could be affected by future actions of state agencies or the state government to regulate or restrict or reduce the value of my property through regulation, and therefore I guess I should declare a conflict of interest.
Very good. And anyone else to chip in? Okay, very...
No conflict.
Very good.
I'm here.
We have before us then the motion to substitute the Dash 5 amendments for the Dash 6 amendments, which we'll do by roll call, take the vote by roll call. Those are the opinion that the Dash 5s should be substituted for the Dash 6s in the amendment to, or the motion to amend House Bill 3540. Will say aye, and those opposed will say no. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byer?
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Roman?
No.
Senator Schrader?
No.
Senator Smith? Can I abstain? I'm just kidding. Write that in the other committee. I will vote no.
A tribute to John Lim once.
Yes.
No.
You meant to vote yes.
No.
Motion fails. We still have before us then the motion to amend House Bill 3540 with the Dash 6 amendments. Is there any further discussion of that motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator George.
Yeah, as I've evaluated it, and many of you received a written copy of some of my comments, which were in addition to my questions that were asked in the first night, I don't know, the letter's quite long, but a few of the narrow issues have been addressed. I think that it is, when you look at the impact of the Dash 6s, you take, which ends up in essence being a lot of record bill for a narrow group of claimants. What we do is in the Dash 6s, repeal the text from Measure 37, replace it with a lot of record bill that's narrow, replace the commonly used evaluation process that's used in most condemnation cases with a condemnation, with a appraisal process that is a warped view of a federal process, and unfortunately we could have adopted what the federal government does, but we didn't. We changed it, so in essence it's going to be almost impossible to ever show any kind of loss under that evaluation process. The only conclusion I have is that the efforts under this is to repeal ballot measure 37 and replace it with a narrow lot of record bill, which is what the Dash 6s do. I think it goes back on two votes of the public. Over 1 million people voted on it. I am saddened by how this process has gone forward. I think there was definitely some point upon which we could have had a bipartisan solution, and unfortunately I think we're left with a issue that's going to end up on the ballot, end up with a third vote by the public, and a missed opportunity by just about everybody who has sat through hours and hours of testimony, and everybody on this panel. And it saddens me, and I think it's an unfortunate turn. And this policy that I see in these Dash 6s is one of the worst efforts that I see to overturn what the will of the voters is going to be. So I will be casting a no vote. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Garrard. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Dash 6 document is not a product of this Fairness Committee. It's a product of two state agencies, LCDC and the Department of Justice. This document is neither fair, nor does it really fix Measure 37, other than to help kill it. I will be voting against it.
Any further discussion? Senator Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I have a different view. I mean, this is something I've grappled with for probably most of my life as a local planning commissioner. It's also been something I've grappled with at the legislature since 2001. The mood and temper of the times after Measure 37 originally passed were such that there was really no opportunity, despite Representative Garrard's great efforts a session ago even, to come up with some sort of clarification, some sort of way to find our way through the chaos that seemed to prevail around Measure 37. When I listened to the testimony of a lot of the people out there, it became clear to me that there was no way we were going to divine the intent of Measure 37 and what people thought they voted for, because everyone seems to have had a slightly different view of what the intent was. So I guess I come down on the side of, well, if there's an opportunity ever in this body to provide at least a little bit of surety, a little bit of fairness, and a little bit of clarification of what may or may not be in the eternal struggle, if you will, between valuing our property rights and valuing the quality of the life we have in our community. This bill is certainly not perfect. I don't think anyone expects us to come up with a perfect solution. I dare say most of the people in this room right now, the first blush, will not like this. There'll have to be a lot of discussion about the give and take that occurred in the work group, that's occurred based on the testimony we've heard, and that's occurred as a result of comments from some members that indicate they may be voting against the Dash 6 amendments. I am proud of the Dash 6 amendments in that they do not restrict anyone's property rights. If a person feels like they want to go through this system, go through the system as they perceive it to be, they can do so. We are not. We were careful not to restrict a person's opportunity to pursue things as they felt the Constitution guaranteed them. They've got a vested right in this system. They can choose if they think they've got a vested right or do not. We're not trying to restrict people's ability to do what they feel is important for them. On the other hand, there are great trepidation based on the court decisions that have occurred, those that have not occurred yet, about what that really means. Transferability has been brought up again and again and again. And I guess I'm pleased that we're actually trying to address it. We're trying to address that. Our opportunity here is to clarify things and make it so that this is a real opportunity for people to get redress. I feel, and this is me, listening to the testimony, that there's a pretty clear indication that yeah, people ought to be able to build a few homes. I mean, goodness gracious, we have kids, we have grandkids, we have a family farm we want to establish here, and we're getting older, it's tough to take care of the place. Gosh, give us that opportunity. Or, frankly, I'm getting older, and I've been a farmer my whole life, my kids aren't interested, I'd like to sell some of this off, and so I can have a decent retirement. And I respect that. I don't think most of those people are against their neighbors enjoying their quality of life around them. And so again comes to that juxtaposition of how far do we go. When I think of the people that have testified, I heard a lot of people testify in favor of Measure 37 as is, whatever that meant. And I'm not sure I understood what that meant. Some people obviously do, and they can pursue their rights. I had a lot of people testify they were against Measure 37. They didn't like that at all. We're totally against it. I don't want any fix. I hate it. Then we had a few people say, I don't know how many, but a number of people say, well, I voted for Measure 37, but now I think it's a bad idea. I didn't understand it. I didn't hear any testimony about people that voted, against Measure 37 that said they would vote for it now. So it begs in my mind the question of coming up with some alternatives. I think the so-called express lane, the so-called conditional lane, are great opportunities for Oregonians to size up what they want to do. You can go through a long, extensive, American revered process of, battling things out in the courts with all those super legal eagles. Or, I just want a few homes. I'm great. Express lane, all I got to show is I had it, and I had the opportunity to build at the time. That's simple. No valuation, no appraisal, and we're going to get a lot of people from the more environmentally friendly element of our community that think that's egregious, totally egregious. Measure 37 clearly states must show reduction in fair market value. Yes, Senator George has a point. We're violating the spirit of Measure 37 in that respect. What we are trying to do is juxtapose that again against a lot of people didn't understand the legal mumbo jumbo. They wanted a property right. They wanted the right to develop their property. And we still have that in this document. If those feel, some people feel three, four, that's way too little. My property's bigger or more valuable. They have the right to go through the conditional use lane. Limit a cap, pick a cap. I mean, this is our arbitrary opportunity. We said 10. We thought that was reasonable. 20 statewide. We made a decision, and I feel I'm very comfortable with this. I'll talk to anybody that we're not going to have major subdivisions through our state out in our farm and forest ground. That is not what Oregonians voted for, in my opinion. Just my opinion. They also did not vote for commercial industrial developments to spring up next door. We do, no offense to the one chair, I don't want to be like Houston. I don't want us to look like Houston, where there's a gravel pit right next to my house, or a steel factory, or a commercial big box store next to my house. And that is definitely happening, and it's possible under this. We also make sure that those people have gone through this process, don't have a lot of extra expense. They can just go right into the express lane or conditional use. We're not taking away all, if they, you know, want to, if they've already got approval, they got approval. And even, I'll divert slightly, sir, to the extension bill. They mean here's an opportunity for people to still approve up before this referral even takes effect. We're trying not to take away people's rights. There's no suspension envisioned by this committee. I feel this committee's been pretty thoughtful. The process is not perfect, but this legislative body, frankly, as we saw today, is never always perfect. Never always perfect. The chairs have gone out of their way to hear from citizens across the state. People have traveled a long distance. People have been around here. We've had a lot of the same people come back, and I'm pleased with their passion and their interest. End of the day, I think this is about the best product we could possibly get out of here, and I'm proud to cast an aye vote in favor of the Dash 6 Amendment, sir.
Further discussion? Senator Przanski.
Co-chair, it has been a hard road. It's been a long road for a lot of us on the committee, not only serving on the committee, but also on the work group that was established. If I remember correctly, I believe the work group met 13 times, possibly 14 times, during this period of time. And when we got together as a work group, we set some framework as to what we were attempting to do, find common ground, try to find some type of a fairness, and being able to clarity and being able to give Oregonians who were, having claims, an opportunity to be able to understand what 37 did and how they could actually exercise their rights there. It's worth noting that we have over 160 lawsuits that have been filed based on the inability to get clarity from Measure 37. When you look at the impact that it has had, and we've heard for so many individuals here during this period of time, that they were, in fact, disillusioned as to what this impact meant. Maybe not for their neighbor, but from what their perspective was going to be, from actions that their neighbors may take in developing land that they had open to them and were looking at doing what they consider grave harm to their ability to maintain the quality of life they wanted. What we know from the work that we've gone through, looking at the claims that have been filed under the Dash 6, 60-70% of all claimants will be able to take care of their business and move through the process with clarity and understanding of how to get through that process. And they do, in fact, as Senator Schrader said, get to make a decision. They get to choose which of the two paths or the third path if they feel they want to go through the courts on the part of if they believe they've vested and they want to exercise that right. This legislature has been taxed to try to make decisions. Back in 2001, the good Representative Girard was one of the individuals trying to find clarity there and trying to give some, ability to move a product forward. Unfortunately, because of what I believe outside forces, was not able to do that. And the same thing happened in 2005. We had at one point actual very close to reaching resolution, but unfortunately that was not able to be accomplished. Today we are giving something back to the voters. They will get to decide under this process as to whether they agree with what our belief is as to what they wanted as to clarity, fairness, and a process to actually proceed and to realize their claims. Now, regarding what actually happens after this,
It will be up to the voters as to the referral, but clearly we are still in session, and if there are individuals who want to continue to work on this issue and come to some other type of resolution, there is opportunity to do that. We have seen this occur in previous sessions and other type of issues where a path was set, but through continued work, other directions were taken. So that is still something that could be on the table. But I do believe it's time to move forward and make certain that this does not become part of what I would call the end game, where you do, in fact, see individuals are and issues that are very important to people in the state thrown into the sausage maker.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask a couple questions, if I might, of the co-chairs. What happened to the work that we did in the work group on the appointment of a committee to present to the Big Look Committee some ideas to fix the underlying why we got Measure 37 in the first place?
Mr. Chair, if I could answer that question.
Please.
Representative Smith, that work is still going to continue. This is the first stage of dealing with the issues around Measure 37. If you remember from the work group, we decided that was something that could not be included in this bill, that we needed to focus on Measure 37, and that's what the Dash 6 will do. We will continue to meet starting in the next week or two and trying to set up the framework that we want to send to the Big Look. I also believe that it will be something for us to decide what do we want to do as a legislature during the interim. You know, I actually have floated some of the ideas that we've talked about in the work group with some of the individuals that are much more versed with the Big Look. They have a lot of questions and concerns as to what may actually result from that process. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just what's been reported back to me. So I feel that we have the opportunity and should take the opportunity as this committee and continue to at least scope the issues that we did, all the work that we did, and then we had the what we call a parking lot of all those issues that we put there for the Big Look. They're still there. And it's my intent and the co-chair's intent to move forward and come to some type of resolution, not sharing what that form will be, if it will be another bill or if it will be some type of documentation, some type of writing that we would do as a committee if we can get support for it, to move forward those issues that we think from all of the work we've done, from all the testimony we've heard from over 300 people, to make certain that they are, focused with some of the issues that we've heard. I feel that a lot of the work that we've done has actually given us an opportunity to report to the Big Look and let them know what we've heard through the public hearings that we've had through this session.
I guess my question was you didn't tell me what the format would be for that. You don't know yet whether it'll be a bill form or a committee or.
Well, that's
whatever.
Something that we'll decide.
Okay. Okay. I think that was really important because
I agree.
If we don't fix the underlying causes of why Measure 37 happened and Measure 7, we have done nothing. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
I agree.
Any further discussion? Representative Clem.
Thank you. I'm going to support the Dash 6 amendments. And I still have, as I think I've shared with the committee chairs, some concerns. It's a very difficult decision. My experience in just being a private citizen really shaped my views about this more than running for office or becoming a legislator. You know, I tried to get involved in farming and agriculture and married into a family that does that, and it's very hard for agricultural people to make a living now, especially in kind of the middle income category where they have a middle, you know, we call them the straddlers, a medium amount of acreage. And I can understand why people voted for Measure 37. I can understand why people in agriculture who are farming voted for Measure 37. My problem with Measure 37 is that it doesn't take into account, in my view, the effects of exercising all of those collective rights that people felt they were entitled to. Once you see the maps and you see the actual effect of all those rights, I believe it's detrimental to the long-term health of agriculture and certainly the quality of life of our state. So I would prefer a different method that finds a way to solve those questions on the effects on agriculture. And it's really hard for me to vote for this in some ways, because even 2 to 3 houses on prime good farmland, instead of some other way to try and purchase conservation easements, something is very hard. Because I've seen what happens when agriculture and residential uses come together, and it's not good for agriculture. The state has a lot more to do to improve the health of the agricultural economy than just sort of limit the land to farm use. There's no doubt about that. And I don't want to go on and make a big long speech about this. Essentially, I'm going to support the amendments. I would like us to take into consideration some of the points in the Farm Bureau letter that we should have received today, because as this moves through to Ways and Means, I think there are some fair points in there that need to be resolved, but they're not going to be ready for tonight. I'm happy that we are at least dealing with the water issue to some extent in the 4 through 10 valuation formula. I'd like to see an overall review of sort of when our Water Resources Department can become involved in a well instead of our exempt well system. Now it's a little difficult for people and neighbors who have talked to me to plan for what's going to happen to their water usage under the current system, because they don't really know until after there's an affected water right and then there's an enforcement action, and that's late in the game. The valuation mechanism is something that at least it's here, whether people like it or not. It's up for each individual member to decide for themselves, but proving a loss was what I felt the fundamental cornerstone of Measure 37 was, that somehow you could prove you had a loss and then you had the opportunity to be compensated. And this is as good as we're going to get at this point, and I really commend the group, even though I've obviously sworn off not being on it and said it. This is a lot of hard work. I know it didn't end up being something that the entire members of the work group can even say this was from the work group. So I don't want to put anybody in a box and say that this is a product of the work group that met, but whoever put in effort on this, thank you very much for attempting to do it. I think Oregonians for the next decade are going to thank this legislature for the work they did to try and deal with this issue. Thank you.
Senator George.
Either of the chairs, although, as I've stated numerous times on this, the impact of Measure 37 is on less than 1% of the land in the state and an average of one house on 12 acres. However, as the co-chair mentioned, the request for compensation has been somewhere around $10 billion. With that being so, there is in our laws, there is a certain amount of when you change a use, and depending on how the Department of Revenue rules on this, you have to pay 10 years of back taxes. In addition, once you change that use, you pay taxes at a higher rate. As I do the math on that, the revenue impact to local governments and to the state, and ultimately, because $5 out of every 15 goes to schools, that's hundreds of millions of dollars of immediate impact on our schools. And I was just wondering if this had a subsequent referral to revenue, or if we're going to get a revenue impact statement on this significant rollback about Measure 37, which will have an impact on property taxes in the state.
Senator, there is no subsequent referral that was put in the Speaker's office on House Bill 3540, although we anticipate, because of the fiscal impacts, there will be a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Are we going to get a revenue statement on the amendments to Dash 6s, as it seems like to me that this would be, this is a huge impact to the schools in the state of Oregon.
Senator Schrader's
I think Ways and Means will get whatever they need to work
through. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think Ways and Means can look at this in pretty clear order. I think that this is one of those things that certainly isn't going to impact the state's revenue at this point in time. And as we look at it down in Ways and Means, maybe there's an opportunity to look on if there's a potential benefit for the local governments. But we'll certainly look at this.
Mr. Chair, if I could, the fact is that the state of Oregon backfills to our school districts a great deal of money for our schools. And the idea of school districts and local governments getting basically 15 or 10 years of back taxes would have an immediate impact on our school budgets across the state. And then, of course, that would have a direct impact on our state budget. And so I just want to make sure that we have some kind of revenue impact on these particular amendments, because the way I read these amendments, there's going to be many of the claimants in the state will not be able to get anywhere near what they expected, if anything, and many of them won't get anything at all. And it seems like to me we need to have that clarified. We need to have the maps on this anyway, figure out what the impact is going to be, and ultimately what the impact is on our local governments and our state budget. And I just think it could have literally hundreds of millions of dollars of impact, and I don't think it's been it's an issue that's discussed. These particular amendments are so all-encompassing as far as rolling Measure 37 back to almost nothing that I think that needs to be at least a consideration of this committee or at some point a referral to revenue to discuss that. Thank you.
Any further discussion? If not, then we have a motion before us to adopt the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 3540. We'll vote by roll call. Those of the opinion that House Bill 3540 should be amended by the Dash 6 amendments will say aye, and those opposed will say no. Clerk will call the roll.
No.
Aye.
No.
No.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. House Bill 3540 is amended by the Dash 6 amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Przanski.
I've moved House Bill 3540 as amended by the Dash 6 amendments to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Przanski moves House Bill 3540
with a due pass recommendation.
As amended, be reported due pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion of that motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator George.
This measure has a referral on it, and the charge of this committee was to come up with some kind of solution that we've already had two statewide votes on this, and I'd be perfectly blunt, don't have a problem with a supposed vote on this, although it's probably going to end up costing the state millions of dollars and further be divisive. The issue of land use planning has been divisive in the state since 1973 and before, probably back to 69 and back to 61 when we first adopted some of our original land use laws. I just think that it's unfortunate for this committee to get to the point where this is a partisan vote on a referral out to the folks, again, punting to the voters, rather than coming up with a bipartisan proposal that we could all live with, which I thought, and I expressed almost every member on this committee, that I thought was not only attainable this session. And so what we're end up with at this point, late date, is a referral out to the folks. We're going to have another big, huge, bitter battle, just like we did on 7 and 37, just like we have for the last 30 years on land use in the state. At the end of the day, no matter how this passes, we do not have any of the major issues of the issues in the land use system resolved. We've not tackled those issues. Those issues have not been discussed by any of the committees in this legislature. I just think that based on all the hard work, I don't care if people agreed or disagreed with me during this process, everybody who showed up here and who has participated in this, that we end up punting an issue that I think is absolutely within our reach to come up with probably a unanimous proposal on this committee. And so with that being said, I'm disappointed in our work, and I know some members have spent many, many hours on this, but I just think that it was attainable without a referral. And at the end of the day, we're going to spend millions of dollars and divide the state even further. It's just unfortunate, and I will be voting no on 3540. Thank you.
Senator Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My final comments, probably three points in nature. One is to answer the good senator's concerns about moving this to the voters. We have precedent in this body and in this state for when things are not clear or people may not have understood what they were voting on to refer things back to the voter. Measure 5 would have devastated, because of the way it was written, certain counties, certain school districts, would have just absolutely devastated them. And I don't think that was the intent of the citizens who voted for Measure 5. This body took on Measures 47 and 50 and referred those to the citizens of the state. Is this what you meant when you voted for Measure 5? I think that's a very legitimate task for us. I think that's our job. We look at things in some details. We also did that with the Rainy Day Fund. We had a Rainy Day Fund that was proposed back in 2002 and was shot down by the voters. That was reproposed not many months later, and citizens at that point said, oh, now I understand. We need to save for the future, and this is the way we do it. And they voted for that. So I don't see this as punting. I see this as a big, volatile issue where citizens at the end of the day want to probably say yes or no. I respect that. I respect that. I'm willing to stand up and say I've crafted this. I'll stand by the document. I'm not going to hide behind the referral. Second point I guess I'd make is that data we've seen that 70% of the claimants can have a low-cost, inexpensive answer with transferability to their property rights claims. 70% of Oregonians ask for 9 lots or less in their claims. So with the express lane and the conditional use lane, most Oregonians, most claimants under Measure 37 can find, if they want, and they don't take away their rights if they don't want, but 70% of them can get in line, a real simple, quick process, particularly express lane, and even so with a conditional lane. We're making this easy and fast for 70% of Oregonians. I think that makes sense. I'm sorry. Last comment I'd make is just a philosophical comment. I apologize to the body for talking a bit much at this juncture. But I will tell you this. Win, lose, or draw on the issue. Win, lose, or draw on how the vote comes out on this committee with Republicans voting one way and Democrats another. The work group process that we couldn't quite get done was actually one of the most enjoyable experiences I've had in the state legislature. This is a tough, tough place to work. And 9/10 of the time, it's about me. What can I get out of the process? Well, the work group, even though we couldn't get to final resolution, the beauty of that was people were asking, what can I do for you? What do you need, Representative? What do you need, Senator? What's your issues? And the very few, I've only had one other experience, another dubious experience, Group of Five, back in 2001. We had to make so-called devastating reductions to our state budget, where Republicans and Democrats, bicameral body, came together and tried to solve some of the huge issues that face our state. So while many people out here probably don't appreciate it, I just want to express to the members of the committee, people I work with, that it was a really great experience. I was proud to be a part of it with them.
Thank you, Senator.
Representative Garrard.
Just a quick comment that I appreciate the comments of Senator Schrader. He was indeed a pleasure to work with in the work group, as were you and Representative Patty Smith and the Senator. I think there was a very valid effort put forth that failed. And it fails, unfortunately, in my opinion, again tonight, but not because the people of that work group did not give a good effort in trying to achieve that nonpartisanship that became very elusive toward the end.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm going to disagree with my good colleague over here from Camby on a few of the points that he just made. First, Measure 5 was constitutional, and it was never re-referred back to the people. Measure 47 was constitutional, and it was tried to be clarified by the legislature in Measure 50. But the point is both constitutional. The Measure 37 was statutory. Measure 7, which I personally did not support because it was constitutional. There is a huge difference between referring back constitutional and statutory law. Constitutional have no choice if you want to change that. Secondly, as to the 70% of the claims, well, by the way I look at it, I don't know, I haven't seen that number of 70%, but the vast majority of those have requested more than 3 claims, which is not going to be eligible for anyone virtually in the Willamette Valley, because you can't do that on high-value farmland, on high-value forest land, on vineyard land, anywhere with a water right, or anywhere else in the Willamette Valley. There's another catch-all in there someplace. So basically, where the vast majority of the claims are in the state, they are not going to be eligible for any more than 3 houses if they don't already have a house. I don't know what that does to that 70% number, but it probably takes it down closer to 30%, I think, or somewhere in that area. So I would disagree with that issue on that. So I guess I just, to me, this is a complete repeal of Measure 37. And I have told everyone that's asked, I've made proposals that, I'm willing to look at ways to implement reasonable change, mitigate conflicts, anything else under Measure 37. This is a repeal. This will be known as a failure to the 74th legislative session.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prezanski.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear some of the comments, and this is kind of what brings back some of the what I would call the inability for the work group to actually close the deal. There was a lot of effort, a lot of try, good faith on all of the work group members. And after those 13, 14 meetings we had, we reached a principle an impasse. We had differences, and we have differences tonight. The reality is that's just the process, and to me, failure would be to walk away and not do anything. Here we're giving the voters the opportunity to say, yes, this is what they meant, or no, it wasn't. And if it isn't, we'll know it. The reality is one of the key principal differences was how we did valuation, and we've heard the different perspectives. The reality at this point, we have to move something forward, and as much as it may not be what each and every one of us wants, it is something that is and was, in fact, built on a framework of that work group. Now, clearly, it is not a product of that work group. There are parts that you can see that was, in fact, still contained, but there were some modifications that were made. So at this point, I think we gave it the best shot we could, and instead of walking away and doing nothing, which I feel, based on the 160 lawsuits that are out there, the uncertainty that many individuals have, that we need to give them an opportunity to say, yes, this is what I meant, this is what will work, and it is fair, it's clear, it gives clarity, or not. But I believe, based on the work we've done and from what we've heard, this will be accepted by the voters of Oregon, and they will, in fact, say that we did a good job by doing what we did tonight.
If there's no further discussion, then we'll proceed to vote by roll call. Those of the opinion that House Bill 3540, as amended by the -6 amendments, should be reported with a due pass recommendation and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will say aye, and those opposed will say no. The clerk will call the roll.
No.
Aye.
No.
Nope. Yes.
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 No.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. House Bill 3540, as amended, is moved from the committee with a due pass recommendation and to the Committee on Ways and Means. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3540 and now open a work session on House Bill 3546 and recognize Co-Chair Pudanski.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I will start with a motion to adopt the -5 amendments into House Bill 3546.
Senator Przanski moves the -5 amendments into House Bill 3546. Do you want to speak to your motion, Senator Przanski?
Sure. The -5 amendments for 3546 is basically the filling in the need to deal with the issue of how we are going to address the issue that has impacted both the state, the counties, as well as some cities as to the claims that have been filed. As members remember, there was an onslaught of claims that were filed basically between a period of November 1, 2006 through December 4th of that same year. And what the testimony has shown from the counties as well as the state is that during that period of time we received over 3,500 new claims, which was over double the number of claims in totality. So we now have somewhere in the range of 7,000 claims. The testimony that we've heard has been pretty straightforward and very clear to me that we need to make certain that we have an opportunity to allow for allow for the counties to process those claims and allow for the state to be able to complete their obligations. It's interesting that when we look at the issues that have been brought up by the counties and the states, as diligently as they've been working, they've been very hard to be able to complete the work in a timely manner. Remember that the ballot measure called for all this to be done within a 180 days. And I need to get one other thing, Mr. Chair, sorry. And so,
Mr. Chair, I apologize. Was it -5 or -6?
-5.
-5 on 3546.
Does everyone have the -5 amendments? They were attached to the, they were in that packet of a stack of amendments that was distributed earlier in the day.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Berard.
Could we have Art Schlack of AOC come before the committee? I'd like to ask him a question.
I'd be happy to do that. Let's make sure that Senator Przanski has given us all the introductory remarks.
I haven't.
Okay. I'll wait.
You say you have, or?
I have not.
Have not. Let's hear the rest of the introduction.
And so based on the testimony that we heard this last, our last meeting on Tuesday, it became clear to me that we needed to make certain that we gave adequate time for these claims to be processed, both at the county level as well as the state level. And so the Dash 5 amendments for 3546 will, in fact, provide the time that has been testified to that will allow the LCDC to move forward with the claims. They're going to be basically ramping up, maybe even more so than they have been, in the sense of trying to get more processed through on a monthly basis. I believe the testimony was somewhere in the range of about 300, and that they still would need time about a year to actually get through all that based on the current funding that they have and based on the current FTE that has been provided. There is an insertion into line 30 of the bill on page 2 of $100,000. That is for the purpose of getting it into Ways and Means and allowing them to adjust and the budget for that department to make certain that they can adequately process those claims and be able to fulfill their obligations under the requirements that will be just an extension from the original requirement under Measure 37. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Senator Przanski. And now, Representative Grard, you wanted to hear from Art Schlack. Is Art in the room?
He's right up there.
Oh, there he is.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Start out by identifying yourself for the record, Mr. Schlack.
Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee, my name is Art Schlack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties.
Nice to see you without your clock.
Nice to be here without my clock.
Art, the other evening when you appeared before this committee, I don't believe anybody asked you the question of would 180-day extension be sufficient for Oregon's counties to process Measure 37 claims.
Mr. Co-Chairs, Representative Girard, there are at least two counties that have, I would say, 300 to 400 claims that they are still going to have beyond the time frame for processing. And I have not talked to them specifically in terms of how much time that they would need to, you know, complete those activities. I think what you're trying to get at or ask me if I don't want to put a question in your mind there, Representative Gard, is could the counties do it in less than 540 days? I think the answer to that is, given the level of activity, yes. Could it potentially take more than another 180 days? The answer, at least for those two counties, might be yes also, given the level of activity. And those counties may want to go back and do public hearings because there is question, because of at least one court case, as to whether we should be having public hearings on all these things, on all these claims. And at least one of those counties right now is condensed their process to the point where they're not doing it in the effort to try and get done. And I think the counties would really like to take a little bit more time to make sure that those claims are processed as thoughtfully and as accurately as necessary at this point.
Thank you, Mr.
Smith.
I just had a question for Mr. Schlack. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the two counties?
Mr. Co-Chairs, Representative Smith, the two counties that I'm referring to are Washington and Clackamas. Those have the, I guess I'll call it the largest largest number of claims that were filed, you know, of the 36 counties in the state. That doesn't mean that there's not some other ones that are, as I indicated the other night, that there, to my records show, at least eight counties that have indicated that they wouldn't be able to get done within the established time frame at this point.
Thank you.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to substitute the dash. I'd like to move it to substitute the dash six amendments with the dash five amendments to House Bill 3546.
You're excused, Mr. Schlag. Thank you very much. Senator George moves that the dash six amendments be substituted for the dash five amendments in the motion to amend House Bill 3546. Discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I represent a number of the counties that are under the most pressure, and I, if you'll notice, to most bills that have been requested, Washington County made a specific request of me to introduce a bill that would apply for an extra 180-day extension, which would take it to 360. That was Washington County. I've talked also to Yamhill County, who had a large number of claims. And based on those conversations and based on the conversations with, I think, most folks who, as far as how the counties were doing it, that 180-day extension would be adequate. I think it'd be something that we could all agree on. And so what the dash sixes are, the dash fives, with that change, and then also make sure that people are able to pursue their claims once they get them. So I just think this would be something that if the majority party could possibly compromise with us on and go along with the request of the of Washington County when they made the request for an extra 180 days, which seems to be it's fine with me. I'm okay with the extension of 180 days. I'd like to hate to see us get to drag this out even further for those who have legitimate claims. And so that's why I'm asking for the dash six amendments. Thank you.
Further discussion of the motion to substitute. Representative Clem.
I guess it's, I don't know if it's a question or a point of discussion. I think Mr. Shetterly's around here somewhere. But I believe what we heard in testimony, and I know what I heard in the Ways and Means Subcommittee that oversees the LCDC budget, is not speaking to the county timeline, but the state timeline, that we've already just in the last month voted a budget through that allocated $4.5 million, I believe it was, to hire additional processors to get us to the 18-month time frame. And I just don't know where we will come up with, you know, to shorten it by however many months that is, the additional several million dollars to shorten it. And that was my impression, was you would need to do this other time frame, you would need more processors. And I don't know where that several million dollars will come from, and I have to sit in the budget committee and find it.
If I could, Mr. Chair.
Senator George.
There's been, I guess, Representative Clem, to address your issue, there's been a great deal of, I suppose, disagreement between a number of the counties that are that are processing the claims and the amount of time and energy it's taken them to do so versus how long it's taken the state to do exactly the same job, especially when the job is many times done by the county first, all that, what they're doing is reviewing. And so in looking at this and in talking with some planners, and then the letter of request that I got from Washington County, that's why we were kind of thinking about 180-day extension. And just so you know, I mean, this is something that I think that we could all agree on and go forward with. And I got to tell you that I mean, obviously it's been of some issue when Mr. Shetterly's been up here. Poor Elaine's had to put up with it. But it's figuring out what the differential in time is between the way the state's doing the claims and the way the county's doing the claims. So anyway, thank you.
Senator Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have to declare a potential conflict here in that I come from Clackamas County, and my wife happens to be a county commissioner. Having said that, I'm pretty first-hand knowledge about the impact of processing these claims in my county, and the process, especially as the May 11th deadline approaches or whatever it is for us to move things here, that it's getting pretty ominous. It's getting pretty onerous, and there is not an adequate review, not even hardly a very decent review at all at this stage of the game in my county. I point out to the good senator from Sherwood area that, you know, it's permissive language. If there are those counties that don't need any extra time, I mean, they can just go right ahead. This is allowing some counties an opportunity to extend things a little bit. And I just think that's appropriate. As co-chair of Ways and Means, I would second Representative Clem's comments that we're having a tough enough time in the budget finding money for other essential priorities that I just don't see us being able to add a whole lot of extra staff. We did a lot of staff additions in the interim between last session and this session. We had been ramped up last session. So we'll see what happens when the bill gets down to Ways and Means, but I'll look at that closely. I just haven't heard a lot of opportunity there, sir.
Senator Johnson.
Given the comments of Representative Clem and Senator Schrader, mine is redundant. I was just going to observe that the process has varied dramatically from county to county in terms of adequacy and thoroughness.
Thank you.
Representative Smith. Just a question of the co-chairs. What would the referral have? What would the effect be on the extension? Would there be any if the referral goes out to the voters?
Good question. And passes.
Or fails, or whichever. Does it matter?
The two would operate independently. That is, okay. The amount of time to process claims would be extended by this by 3546. And if the referral to the voters were turned down, as the voters rejected the fix that was adopted here earlier today, then in this meeting, then and there would be the same claims pending under the original language of Measure 37, but there would be more time to complete the work of processing them.
Okay, and follow-up question then. Could we limit the extension now and then come back in February when we're coming back into session and extend it?
We could do, yeah, I mean, when we come back into session in the 2008, that short session, depending on what the leadership would allow to be discussed, since this would be one that have to fit their objective, and I would assume that based on whatever the vote of the people is, and after the special election, that the that we will then have to have a call it an update as to where at this point the counties are, where LCDC's at, and if the measure is successful at the poll, there's a transition period. There's a 30 days after the election before it becomes effective, and then there would be the shifting into the procedure that's in that bill, 3540. And so I would think that hopefully the leadership would allow us to have a discussion as to what, if any, modification would be appropriate, either shortening or lengthening or whatever it may be, based on what the output has been.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you.
Okay, she passes. Yeah, any further discussion on the substitution motion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pozanski.
One thing I want to say is, based on the testimony we just heard this last Tuesday, we did hear regarding the extension bill. We heard from individuals that brought up examples, and I believe one of them was city councilor from Albany, talking about what was reported in their paper that Linn County was processing these through their commission at 90 seconds on a consent calendar. And what we've also heard and what we know from the court cases that consent the contested cases can be required. I know in my county of Lane, I've been told that they've reserved Tuesdays, if I'm not mistaken, for processing for the last number of months, and I think they're going through 10 to 20 minutes, and they're really limiting the number of people that can testify because they're going on such a rigid schedule to try to meet that 180 days that was originally called for under 37. So I do believe that the motion that's before us, the DAS-6, is speculative as to whether it can help the counties or not. Clearly, it does not take care of the needs of the state that's been testified to by LCDC, and so I will not be able to support the DAS-6 and will be supporting the DAS-5s.
If there's no further discussion, we'll take a vote on the motion to substitute the DAS-6 amendments. So those of the opinion that the motion to amend House Bill 3546
should substitute the dash 6 amendments for the dash 5 amendments. We'll say aye, and those opposed will say no. Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
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 Aye.
No.
No.
Motion fails. We have before us then the motion to amend House Bill 3546 with the dash 5 amendments. Is there any further discussion of that motion? If not, then we'll proceed to vote. Those of the opinion that House Bill 3546 should be amended by the dash 5 amendments will say aye, and those opposed will say no. The clerk will call the roll.
No.
Yes.
No.
No.
Aye.
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 Motion carries. House Bill 3546 is amended by the dash 5 amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brzozinski.
I move House Bill 3546 as amended by the dash 5 amendments with a due pass recommendation to the Committee on Ways and Means based on the prior reference and referral from the Speaker's office.
Senator Brzozinski moves the House Bill 3546 as amended to be reported with a due pass and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion of that motion? If not, then the clerk will call the roll. Those in favor of the motion will say aye, and those opposed will say no.
No.
Yes.
No.
Nope.
Yes.
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 No.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. House Bill 3546, as amended, is reported from the committee with a due pass recommendation and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. I close the work session on House Bill 3546. And committee, that concludes our work at this meeting. Thank you very much for your attendance and for your long and hard work on the issues we've been tackling in this committee. We are adjourned.